Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Inside Scoop Live. This is one of many features presented to you by Reader Views. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Hello, and thank you for tuning in. Today I'm chatting with Gerard Bianco about his book, The Deal Master. But before we dive into his book, I'd like to tell you a little bit about him. Gerard was born and grew up in Brooklyn, New York. Smoky pool halls, Irish bars, and Italian social clubs are just some of the local hangouts that greatly influenced his writing. Gerard also owns Port 4, which is Portland, Maine's most unique jewelry store and is located in the heart of the Old Port. Port 4 features custom-designed jewelry and gifts that fit any style and price range. And I have to admit something I admitted to him a little earlier, and that is that I really got hung up on his jewelry website. There are some beautiful pieces there, Gerard. Welcome.
Hi, Gail.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, and thanks for the little plug about jewelry.
Oh, I love jewelry. I guess I don't really know many women who don't. Especially beautiful, unique pieces. It's just, you know, it's art in hard form.
Yeah, right. Exactly. What's interesting, and a lot of people can't get the connection, is that for me, creating jewelry and writing is the same process.
Really? Explain a little bit about that, real quick.
Well, it all has to do with creativity, and whether you're creating a piece of jewelry, designing something, or writing a novel, it all has to do with laying it out, foundation, end result, and then the process in between. And if you are good at one particular way of doing something and you transfer that same pattern over to something else, it will come out just the same way.
Wow. A desirable outcome, huh?
Exactly. Huh. You know, people like to think of themselves in a box. I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm an engineer. And they can't make the transition to something else. But if they think more in terms of this very large box, and they're surrounded with this box, then they could do anything. They can go from one profession to the next.
Well, that's so true. Especially early in life, many people wind up going down a career path that is one that was basically sort of created, or co-created at the very least, by an influential adult, primarily parents. And later in life, they discover that, you know, gee, this really isn't what I want to keep doing. But they may be so invested in it that they don't know how to shift gears.
Yeah, I read somewhere that 90% of all people are in the same profession as the first job they got when they got out of school.
Wow. Hmm. Yeah. Well, before we get too far away, we really want to talk about the book, The Deal Master. Now, this is
all that.
Now, this is a novel, and as we get underway here about it, give a little bit of the storyline to the audience.
Well, it takes place in New York City. That's where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And I now live in Maine, but I've lived in New York for over 50 years. And I was like a sewer rat, you know, traveling uptown, downtown, every which way in Manhattan, and lived in Brooklyn, and traveled a lot in the other boroughs. And so when it came time to write the book, I decided to have the setting in New York, where, you know, naturally, where I knew all the nooks and crannies.
That's right.
All of the landmarks and all of the hotels and the restaurants are real. Of course, the people and the events are fictitious.
Mm-hmm.
But that adds to a certain quality about the book, especially people who live in New York who read it. You know, they recognize different places, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that's kind of fun. Anyway, it starts out as a mystery, and there is a serial killer who is murdering women with red hair.
Mm-hmm.
New York City police detective William Gillette is on the chase, and he has some problems in that their lack of clues.
Mm-hmm.
Until he meets a particular gentleman who helps him out by providing him some necessary information that will take him a little bit further in the case.
Okay. Now, tell us too, Gerard, what is this your first novel?
Yes, it is.
And what motivated you to write it? What's behind this?
I saw 5 bad movies in a row.
Oh, Lord.
It's a true story. My son and I loved to go to the movies. We would go once, sometimes twice a week. And after seeing 5 bad ones, I said to him, you know, I could do better than this.
Uh-huh.
And I did. And it became a challenge for me, along with being a jewelry designer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also an artist, illustrator, portrait painter. You know, been associated with galleries in Manhattan, and I've done entertainment illustration and paintings for big companies like Merrill Lynch and things like that. And so what I did was I sat down to create this book, and I handled it in the same way I would a jewelry design or an artistic endeavor. In other words, I created the beginning, I knew my end result, and then I filled in the center.
Okay, but now along the way here, didn't you also need to do some research on the criminal process and the investigative process? It might be a little different from what you would also do in painting and creating jewelry.
Actually, I hate to admit this, but I didn't get too technical in this book.
Okay.
As far as police procedure. What I did primarily was tell a good story.
Okay, that's crucial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't. You know, I've read some very interesting books by, you know, some wonderful authors who get very technical. You know, they name each button on a ship, or, you know, they'll tell you all kinds of stories about how things came about, you know, but that didn't interest me.
And how something works.
What interested me more was the process that this detective goes through from the beginning investigation up until the end of the story.
Okay,
that was the paramount.
Okay, and now he is the main character, the sort of, I guess, for lack of a better term, hero, right?
He's the protagonist, the detective.
Uh-huh.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and so how did you create him? Was he somewhat of a compilation of maybe a bit of your own curiosity and creativity combined?
I think he was, for me, he was every man, quote unquote. He, you know, he is not your typical hero. He's not the nice guy. He's a New York City detective that's seen a lot of blood and guts and gore and all kinds of things.
A little hardened?
A very hardened kind
mm-hmm.
of guy, you know, who also has faults.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he has dreams and desires. Outside the parameters of what we call social values, and, you know, and he's a regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
And things happen to regular guys.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And most of us are regular people, aren't we?
Exactly right. And that's why a lot of people look at this book, you know, and they'll take that particular character, and some people have this reaction where, you know, they really don't like him. But, you know, it's kind of like looking into the mirror without clothes on and knowing, realizing you're on a diet.
Oh, my. what a thing for folks to have to think about on a Monday morning. Well,
it's a little too real sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, Gerard, your book has been characterized as a pretty haunting ride with lots of twists and turns beyond murder and betrayal and past seduction and desire. And tell us a little bit more about how you wove these into the fabric of your story.
Well, what I did was, you know, when I originally decided to write the book, I sat down and created a list of all the things that I would like to see in a good book. In other words, I really wrote a book that I would like to buy somewhere and read and, you know, have a good time with. And part of that adventure is the ride that you go on, or that it feels like, you know, when you're in and around and up and down and you really don't know where this thing is going.
Mm-hmm.
What happens with this book And some people don't care for this, but for me it was crucial, is that it starts out as a mystery, and then somewhere along the line it switches genres and it becomes a thriller.
Huh.
Now, a lot of people don't know what the difference is.
Well, help them out.
A mystery is when there is, let's say, a dead body, and the detective comes in, and you as the reader stand behind the detective, and you develop clues. Clues are held back, and you try to solve the case. Finally, at the end, the detective has all the clues, and he can make an assumption and an arrest. A thriller, what happens is, all the stuff doesn't happen to somebody on the outside, it happens to the protagonist. So the clues are not held back, they're given to you, the reader. They're held back from the protagonist. So you know who the killer is. You know that the detective or the protagonist is going to meet the killer in that dark house across the street. And just, no, you know, don't go, that kind of thing.
And in fact, his own life becomes in danger.
Ah, exactly. And so, in the beginning, you have this mystery of this murderer, this serial killer, and the detective's going out there and they're trying to solve the case. And, you know, that's a regular mystery. And then slowly, it morphs into this thriller.
Mm.
All of a sudden, you don't really care too much about the mystery anymore or the murder. Things are happening to the detective, and you wonder what this is all about.
Right. Absolutely. Oh, that's terrific. Okay, now your book also touches on themes of betrayal and seduction and lust and
all those good things.
Right, that's all those juicy things, huh?
Right.
And these are elements that our protagonist finds himself involved in.
Yeah. He like I said, you know, he's human. And you know, he's working with somebody that's spinning his wheels, turning him on, and you know, he falls for this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it could happen to any of us.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
It's one of our driving forces, isn't it? Relationship and connections.
Yes, exactly right.
Regardless of how much we might pretend to resist.
but that's the fun part about reading the book too, because it's not just you know, the chase. There are things that are happening to the characters as they interact that people, you know, get hung up a little bit with. And,
right.
And that's kind of fun too, because it concretizes them. You know,
say that again?
It concretizes them. It makes them more real.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we have a hero that we all love, we grew up with, and he is, for 50, 60 years, he's one of our all-time America's favorite heroes, and that's Superman. And what is it about Superman that we like, that we love? Well, the fact that, yeah, he's a great guy, and he's got all these superpowers that we'd all like to possess,
mm-hmm.
but there is this thing called kryptonite, and that makes him real. That brings him down to our level. And when he comes down to our level, we can then identify with him. And that's what good authors put into their books, put into their superhero books, is this identification that you want to have with the protagonist.
Well, that's very true. That's very true. It's one thing to let ourselves be taken away out of our own dilemmas, if you will, or our own problems by going into some other storyland. And sometimes we do sort of stop and ponder on, you know, how real could this be? But when there is an element of reality thrown into it, where the hero or protagonist can be more human-like and more real, more like the everyday next-door neighbor, so to speak, then it does, it lends a great deal of authenticity to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why the new James Bond movie that just came out is so successful, is because they've written this character in this movie as a real person.
Yes, yes. I haven't seen that movie yet, but I have seen the trailers, and it looks like that. And
yeah,
of course,
you know.
And of course, the ongoing fascination with Superman, the ongoing, you know, needing to find, and I mean, I support it. I think it's a great, role model. For youngsters growing up.
Absolutely.
Well, now, Gerard, tell me a little bit about who you're targeting with your novel. What's your target audience, and who do you think would benefit most from reading this novel?
Well, I would benefit most.
Well, you said that. You said you wrote the kind of novel that you would love to read. I think that's a great response. That's a great motivation.
I like to say that I like to take the stretch the possibilities of the extreme just a little bit with this. I'm a big fan of things that are, how can I put this, that are real, but not real.
Okay.
You know, does that make sense?
Well, give me a little more information on that.
Okay. I'm a big fan of mythology. And mythology is storytelling primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And stories that are metaphorical for other things. And this is the kind of reader that really enjoys this book.
Ah.
Someone who doesn't take everything for granted. You know, I have people that love this book, and they sit down and they read it in, you know, one sitting, or they'll read it in 2 days, you know, and they'll come to me and say, oh, Gerard, you know, this was so good, and I couldn't put it down, and, you know, I read it in 4 hours. I said, my God, it took me 6 years to slow down.
Well, I have to tell you too, Gerard, that I realize it took a long time to produce it, but there's nothing I love better than a book that grabs me and keeps me and won't let me put it down. I mean, I may stay up all night long reading it, however long it takes, because I don't want to wait to read the next page.
Right. Well, that's good, as long as you go back and read it again.
Ah.
I sit down with book clubs, you know, and people have read this book, and they, you know, they'll read it the first time, and, you know, and then we'll sit and we'll talk about it, and then I'll say, did you see the significance about this, or what did you think about, you know, this other thing, and they'll ask me a question about why I put something in the book, and I'll tell them how it relates to something that they never saw. And only because, you know, it's like a guy who creates this fantastic meal, and you get someone who's ravenous, and they come in and they sit down and they just devour
it,
you know, without tasting it. And that's the same with this book. You need to read it through one time, yeah, quick, and just don't put it down. You know, it's great. And then you need to go back and get into the more subtle aspects of the book, because they're part of the story, but they are a story in and amongst themselves.
You know, I never thought of it quite like that before, but that makes great sense to me. I mean, I have read some books that I couldn't put down, and part of my concern, and it could be that for many others, has always been that if I put something down that I really love, you know, life will interfere with my opportunities to pick it back up again and finish it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because for me, reading is such a gift. It's such a—I mean, it's almost better than a nice hot bubble bath or something like that. You know?
Oh, okay.
It's just—I mean—I luxuriate in a really good book.
Yeah. It's you know, and books mean different things to different people.
True. Very true.
You know, I had some experiences that, you know, there's one of the lectures that I give when, you know, I go around talking. One of them was the 10 greatest things that have, you know, come out of this whole experience of writing.
Uh-huh.
And one of them is the stories that I hear from people about this book. One guy came to me and said that, you know, he's a big fan of hypnotism.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to pick out something in this book that just made this book like one of the best novels he ever read.
Wow, okay.
I had another person who sent me an email and then came in and visited me. And this was very strange. She was involved in an accident, and it affected part of her brain.
Mm-hmm.
And she was an avid reader before the accident. And she was going through some therapy, and the therapist recommended my book.
Huh.
And she picked it up and read it cover to cover. And it, what she said was, helped her to recover the ability to read.
Oh, wow.
I mean, how do you foresee that?
No, you can't. What a wonderful, wonderful affirmation.
Yeah.
That was
interesting.
Absolutely. Well, now, you know, okay, Gerard, obviously you're going to write some more novels. Do you have a sequel in the making here?
Yes, I do.
Yay!
I do, but I've got one or two other things that I'm working on in the meantime.
Okay.
I'm writing a nonfiction book right now called The Triumph of Success.
Mm-hmm.
It is 52 3-minute strategies for the modern business professional.
Okay, great.
For each week of the year.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
No kidding. Oh, I look forward to that.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm looking forward to that. Well, and before we leave the Deal Master, what is there a message or any sort of understanding that you would like for readers to glean from this? Or was this just the result of having gone to see movies that I know enticed you, and you get in there and you see them and you're disappointed, and you decide, you know, I can do something better than this.
Yeah. So you're looking for a message that I'm looking to give?
Mm-hmm. And there may or may not be one. I'm just asking.
Well, that's an interesting question. I really think that... Well, let me put it this way. When I sign my books,
mm-hmm.
at a book signing, or people come up to me and ask me to sign,
mm-hmm.
I put down enjoy the ride.
Oh, good.
And that is really the whole gist of everything. You know, half of everything is getting there. You know, a lot of times when you've achieved your goal, you say, okay, what next? Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not as important or it's not as fulfilling as the ride to get there.
And you might not even remember much about the ride or the journey.
Yeah.
You're at the conclusion and you're moving right on. So it's almost like, oh gosh, that already sounds disappointing, doesn't it? No, we do hear often, and we don't pay enough attention to this, and that is that we do need to find a way to enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
Because the destination gets here and it becomes a yesterday.
Exactly right.
And so it's the anticipation and the journey.
Live the moment.
That's it. Well, Gerard, we are close to being out of time here. I would like for you to tell the audience, give the audience your website, and tell them where they can find your book and learn more about your jewelry as well.
Oh, thank you. Yes, my website is Gerard, G-E-R-A-R-D, F as in Frank, Bianco, B-I-A-N-C-O, .com.
Mm, great.
GerardFBianco.com, and there you'll have links to my jewelry, my creativity formula, which is another book in the works.
I saw that.
and also to the Deal Master.
Great. Wonderful. And I want everyone out there to know that this interview is going to be posted to your author's page on Inside Scoop Live. We'll create an author's page for Gerard Bianco. And Inside Scoop Live will have that, and Read Reviews and GerardFBianco.com both will have links to this interview. So I want to encourage everyone out there to listen to the interview, share it with a friend, read the reviews, and consider purchasing this book for your library and as a gift. And also check out his jewelry. It's beautiful. He has other gifts as well. Gerard, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Gail. I enjoyed the ride.
I did, too. Totally.
Terrific.
And audience, thank you for tuning into this segment of Inside Scoop Live. Until the next time, bye.